sermon this morning is going to be taken from the first 9 verses of the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 1, verses 1 through 9. I'll be reading from the New Living Translation. The section is subtitled, The Lord's Charge to Joshua. After the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant. He said, Now that my servant Moses is dead, you must lead my people across the Jordan River into the land I am giving them. I promise you what I promised Moses. Everywhere you go, you will be on land I have given you, from the Negev desert in the south to the Lebanon mountains in the north, from the Euphrates River on the east to the Mediterranean Sea on the west, and all the land of the Hittites. No one will be able to stand their ground against you as long as you live, for I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will not fail you or abandon you. Be strong and courageous, for you will lead my people to possess all the land I swore to give their ancestors. Be strong and very courageous. Obey all the laws Moses gave you. Do not turn away from them, and you will be successful in everything you do. Study this book of the law continually. Meditate on it day and night, so you may be sure to obey all that is written in it. Only then will you succeed. I command you, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. I grew up in the decade after the Beatles, so I don't have first-hand knowledge or experience of the impact they had on the culture and the world. History seems to show that they had an effect. John Lennon, the great prophet for bohemian culture of the 60s and 70s, the lead singer of the Beatles, the peacenik who hosted Lovin's Against War, etc., wrote a powerful song that captured the hearts of a generation. The song, the title is Imagine. I'm sure some of you have heard it before. Here are some of the lyrics. Verse 1. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. And the chorus. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. Now, whatever your opinions may be regarding the philosophies, the music, or the lifestyle of Lennon, now, Lennon was a dreamer, and he had a vision for the world. And I would dare say that it would be hard for us to disagree with at least part of his vision. He had a vision for a world that, admirably, was peaceful, without hatred, without war, without anger, and full of, for lack of a better word, grace. And this truly is a beautiful and inspiring vision. It all stemmed from a singular word, imagine. Imagine is a word full of possibilities, full of potential, and imagine is what I want us to do today. I want us to imagine a world not living for today, but a world full of people living for Christ. For Lennon's dream of peace, grace, redemption, freedom, and hope is not possible without Jesus. Imagine if we decided to serve the Lord. What would happen? What would that service entail? What would that mean? All of us need dreams and visions for our lives. It's a basis for our hope for the future. In preparing for this sermon, I was taken back into time when I was in the 7th and 8th grades. This was back in the early 1980s. Yeah, laugh. I can laugh. Right as the light was beginning to dawn on the personal computer revolution. Some of the computers back then wouldn't even compare to the cell phones and PDAs that we carry around today. I attended a 2-room elementary school in Singapore. At that time, it was the headquarters for the Far Eastern Division. I had a friend named Steve, a couple of grades below me, whose dad was the math and science teacher at the academy there. Through him, I was introduced to the wonders of computers. It was a Commodore PET, for those who might know, and a Fujitsu PC. And I learned to program the computers in BASIC. And I discovered that I was a natural when it came to programming computers. It was fun. And until this week, I really hadn't thought about why I was initially so attracted to computers and continued working with it for so many years. And then, almost overnight, my interest in it died, at least as far as the programming part of it. You know, I still like to use it, but programming just no longer holds much interest for me. As I was thinking about it, I think it had to do with imagining and dreams. At the dawn of the personal computer revolution, the possibilities with computers seemed limitless. With the right instructions, the computer could be made to do anything I imagined. Although the computer was complex, it was also still simple enough that I was able to learn how all the internal things worked, something that is virtually impossible today. Computers were like magic, but magic that I was able to harness and use, and it remained that way for many years. I entered the workforce as a software developer, a designer and programmer of software, because even in the 1990s, the possibilities of what could be accomplished through computers seemed limitless. If there was a problem, it would be solved. But then, a number of years later, the magic faded. Instead of possibilities and dreams, I had to deal with boundaries and limitations. Instead of discovering what new things and cool things could be done, the job was now about meeting deadlines, doing just enough to make sure the company could sell upgrades to customers. New ideas and dreams that I had that other programmers, other developers had, were quashed by the company. Because, they said, there wouldn't be a large enough market. It wouldn't be worthwhile. It wasn't cost effective. And now that I'm looking back, I see that this may have been one of the major underlying reasons why I became so dissatisfied with my job and eventually resulted in me leaving it. I guess deep down, I'm a dreamer. I'm an idealist. The here and now doesn't speak to the needs and desires of my heart. I'm always on the lookout for something better. Explanations and visions that make a better sense out of life. So, with Lenin's visions and my experience in mind, I would like you to consider a question. This question holds promise for us as we look at our lives. This question will give us the confidence to face our future. Here's the question. Can you imagine what your life will look like with the presence of God? This seems like a pretty harmless question. But at a closer look, we will find that when we imagine our lives with the Lord, our world becomes much clearer. Joshua chapter 1, verse 2 starts out, "My servant Moses is dead. Now proceed to cross the Jordan." With the death of Moses, an era had ended. And God looked the new era with new leadership. The leader he chose was Joshua. Could you imagine leading perhaps a couple of million Israelites into a country that they had never been to before? Can you imagine his and their fears, anxieties, trepidation? Perhaps some of them might have commented to Joshua, "Moses never did it that way." Or how about, "Moses was so much more of a spiritual man." Or, "Moses, he saw God on Sinai. What experiences have you had with God?" Or how about, "You're just too young, Joshua. You're inexperienced." God is calling on each and every one of us. All of us are being called to enter a new land. Land that we have not yet seen. And we will face obstacles as we are called to move on. For each of us, these Jordan rivers in the walls of Jericho represent different obstacles. For some of us, it may be our past, lack of education, poor upbringing, habits and tendencies. For others, it may be our present, maybe our lack of skills, our lack of knowledge, poor reputations, lack of health and vitality. For others, these obstacles may be our fear of the future. Are we undermining what God wants to do in our lives by focusing on the obstacles? Are the obstacles discouraging us? When you consider what God is calling you to do and become, do you say to yourself, I can't go forward because you fill in the blank? God said to Joshua, now proceed to cross the Jordan. No one shall be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened or dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. God, through Jesus, has said the same to each of us. In one of his parting statements, Jesus said, and be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. When we follow God, when we become his servants, we will find that his presence will be with us. Imagine what this means. When God tells us to do something, we're not alone. He is with us. This happened in Moses' life, in Exodus chapter 3, when God appeared to Moses in the burning bush and told him to lead Israel out of Egypt. Moses got scared. Not just scared, really afraid. He said, who am I that I should do this? I'm a nobody. I can't do such a feat. But God responded to Moses, I will be with you. With God's presence, Moses had the strength to do what God told him to do. The same is true in the life of Joshua. Joshua wasn't special or unique. He was just an ordinary Israelite man. The difference wasn't in who he was, but rather the who, capital who, that was with him. God's presence in our lives overcomes much hurt, pain, and loss. Maybe we have been living in the shadows of disappointment due to a lack of love from our parents. Maybe we have lived in a sorrow of a broken marriage. Maybe we are living in the depths of depression. We have some lessons from history that teach us that our circumstances don't have to control our destiny. When we look at our lives with God's presence, we will find that God's presence heals us and raises us up for his purpose. And this is good news for us. Our origins aren't as important as is our obedience to God's call and will. Joshua didn't know how they were going to cross the Jordan. The only word he was given was that the priests of the Ark of the Lord should walk into the river first. In the past, at the Red Sea, God first revealed the means of deliverance before commanding the people to go. But now, the people would have to trust God first before the means of deliverance would be revealed. In following God's call in our lives, do we have a tendency to wait for the path to become clear before setting out? Or are we willing to go forward, not seeing how things will turn out, but trusting that God will make a way? When God calls us to do something, he is there with us. This truly is good news, but what does this practically mean for us? What good is God's presence? When we think of life with God's presence, we must know that first off, it's the best life that a human can have. Without God's presence, we are doomed, whether we like it or not, to a life of pride, anger, resentment, fear, and anxiety. On the other hand, with God, we can live a life of peace and tranquility. Joshua had every reason to fear. That's probably why God repeatedly commanded Joshua in the first few verses of the book bearing his name to be strong and courageous. Joshua had never gone into the land of Canaan to live there before. He didn't know how to lead Israel into this land, but God told him to go. He said that he would be with Joshua. Be strong and courageous, for you shall put this people in possession of the land that I swore to their ancestors to give them. God gave his word to Joshua that the promises made to his ancestors were not forgotten, and that he would be the person to fulfill God's promises. We too need to believe and trust that the promises made by God will be with us. Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to act in accordance with all the law that my servant Moses commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, so that you may be successful wherever you go. Here, God is telling Joshua that success can only come about by remaining in God's will. The law that is spoken of here is more than just the Ten Commandments and more than the Mosaic regulations. These things point to and are arrows to the bigger picture of God's entire will. Likewise, in order for our lives to be successful in God's eyes, we need to be careful to remain inside of God's will. And how do we determine what is God's will for each of us? Verse 8 contains the answer. This book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to act in accordance with all that is written in it. For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall be successful. In Joshua's time, the law was the five books left by Moses. In our time, it consists of the entire canon of Scripture. If we are serious about knowing God's will for us, we need to meditate on His revelation. For this reason, I challenge all of us to read through the Bible together this coming year. At the conclusion of this worship service, I'll be handing out a sheet outlining how we are going to do that together in the year 2007. God had given Joshua every reason to experience quiet and tranquility inside his heart. Firstly, God said that he would be with him. Who is a better guide, instructor, helper, or comforter than God? Joshua didn't need to fear that he was ill-equipped for the task of leading the people. Secondly, God said that he would never abandon or fail Joshua. Not only did God say, "I'm here for you," he said, "I'll always be here for you, and you can count on me to stick by you, even when it gets hard." God promises to be with Joshua in good times and bad, and thus Joshua has reason for peace. And these promises of God are the same for us today. A life lived in God's presence also means a life of strength. In verse 9, God says to Joshua, "Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be dismayed, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." In this verse, the Lord links strength, courage, fearlessness, and confidence with a life lived in the presence of God. When we live our lives in God's presence, fear, anxiety, intimidation and inferiority melt and are replaced by strength, courage, and fearlessness. For Christians, strength is not determined in arms or military might, intelligence, or inherent ability. For Christians, those who have submitted their lives to Christ, strength comes from the capital who is with them. Thus, we have no need to be fearful or dismayed. God will be with us, and that makes all the difference. In all of life, when we live with the presence of God, strength grows inside of our hearts. Today, we are celebrating the communion service. Rather than focusing on what each individual element symbolizes and represents, I want us to focus on the bigger picture. The ordinance of humility, the foot washing, and the communion elements together represents God with us. God came through Jesus to be one of us, to become a servant to us. and to die as one of us, so that we could have God not just with us, but in us. As we participate in and partake of the communion, we acknowledge our willingness to become servants of God and of other people. We affirm our desire and willingness to crucify self and to die to self. Through the communion elements, we publicly acknowledge our desire to have the words and life of Christ living within and through us. Let us all imagine, what would it mean for us if we chose to let God use our lives, to live our lives in His presence? Can you imagine what your life would look like? Life in full service to Jesus? Earlier I mentioned that we would be receiving a plan to read through the Bible. I have a dream for our church. The dream is that I want every one of us to become ministers to one another. In our worships and in our prayer meetings, I want to see every one of us bursting with spiritual insights and illuminations on what we've been meditating on, what we've been studying, so that every one of us is able to teach one another. I dream of the time when this church can exemplify the priesthood of all believers and become a church as God, I think, originally intended. Instead of the pastor, instead of me doing much of the teaching each week, I want to see everyone involved every week, sharing with one another, teaching one another, encouraging one another, exhorting one another. It was 2 Decembers ago. I went out to the Oregon coast by myself for a couple of days. The main reason was to spend some time reflecting on my life, particularly on the future, to envision, to dream, to plan, to determine my priorities to set a new life course. Today, I can point to that time as the beginning of the path that brought me here. Certainly, the journey itself began many years prior, but the focus and the path became more clear during those couple of days. At that time, I didn't know the waypoints nor the destination of where the path would eventually lead, but I could see the first few steps of the path itself. It was a fork in the road, and I took the path less traveled. I found the exercise of spending some time clarifying my spiritual journey to be an extremely helpful one. So I encourage every one of you to do something similar. I don't expect you to take a couple of days away, but perhaps an hour or two for a couple of days. At the close of this service, in addition to the Bible reading plan, I'll be handing you a small sheet of paper in an envelope. On the piece of paper, I want you to write down your spiritual dreams, some targets for spiritual growth for this coming year, some things maybe that you can do to help you in that growth. And then I want you to put the paper in the envelope, seal it, address it to yourself, and then next week, when you come back, you can turn those sealed envelopes into me. In about 6 months' time, I'll either be handing it or mailing these envelopes back to you so that you can read through them again as reminders and encouragements. Imagine. Imagine what your spiritual life could be. Dream big. Because with God, nothing is impossible.